It's Saturday Night Live! Robin Williams is a little bit intense tonight, and the fun is just beginning. Before the night is over, he will cover not just drugs and politics, but sex, birth, and raising a child. He will personify his own sexual organ, a buccaneering one-eyed pirate who bears a suspicious resemblance to Popeye. He will become a large black female sex therapist.
Thank you, Michael. Hey, and welcome to our latest podcast.
All right.
So tonight, as you can tell from Michael's introduction, we're back with Carly and the Dionysus.
We are.
And we're using Robin Williams as a kind of a focal point. And the opening introduction was... sorry, Michael, I'm not nearly as good as your introduction was.
It's quite all right. It's actually from an article that was originally in Newsweek on July 7th, 1986.
Yeah. 1986, when he was, I think, 33 years old.
Correct.
So we found this write-up about him, which is pretty amazing. It just said so much. It said way beyond, if you've got eyes to see, ears to hear,
yes,
then you see everything. So I just thought that particular one was really powerful because I thought they were telling us so much. One, the buccaneering one-eyed pirate, his sexual organ.
Yes, he's personifying it.
Yeah, which to me, it's the satyr. You know, it's that satyr energy, which we've been talking about. If people aren't up to speed with this, we've been covering this in the last couple of podcasts. So we're looking at Robin Williams as a self-confessed satyr, which I'll point out in a minute. And then he becomes a large black female sex therapist, which just, to me, that's the personification of Carly.
Yeah.
The black and the female, the sex-obsessed.
Right.
That whole, both a mixture of Carly and the Maenads, which are the orgiastic female revelers that follow Dionysus. For anyone who's really into mythology, who really knows their stuff, they'll probably get really pissed off and they might want to switch off because we'll be switching back and forth between Kali, the Indian goddess, and Dionysus, who is of Greek or Phrygian origin. So if that bothers you, then you're better to just kind of go away.
Yeah. Well, we're just, again, this is all play. We're playing with our own theories.
It's play. It's serious play. It's a weird mixture of fun, silly, serious, very, very serious play.
Yeah, and in no way are we disrespecting Robin Williams in any way, just because, you know, because he's dead. It's not it.
No, I wouldn't disrespect him if he's alive either.
No.
But I do disrespect Dionysus, the Dionysian cult, the Kali cults, and anything actually that gets in the way of any living being able to have a decent life.
Right.
Mind you, as I say that, I'm thinking about bacteria and viruses, and actually I'm not 100% really behind them. So, okay, so let's go with the animals and the people and most insects.
Yeah.
But not all, but most, yeah, something like that. Okay, being a bit silly here, we found this really interesting stuff about Robin Williams, and just going to use it
and make some points, some highlights.
Yeah,
from
it's so using Robin Williams is actually to delve into the whole comedic sphere. So we've been looking at the muses.
Right.
So there's a muse of comedy. There's a muse of tragedy. There's the nine different muses.
Yeah.
We've previously looked at comedy and through the research that we have been doing in the last few weeks, I really want to circle back around and look at comedy a whole lot more. Now seeing it in terms of that Dionysian cult. So Dionysus is the Greek god of wine, but so much more. Let me just read you this little quote. Oops, sorry. I was at the library yesterday. I picked up a book called Greek Legends and Stories. I open it up. The page I open it up to could have been any page, but it was the chapter Dionysus. It's just amazing. Again and again and again, you've had this synchronicity for just finding information. The last chapter of this little segment on Dionysus, it says that one of his oldest festivals was the Agriona, where a young boy was sacrificed. Most unusually, there were human sacrifices elsewhere in Greece and in the Greek islands, notably in Chios and Lesbos, which we know is... See, what we keep finding again and again is this... It's a homosexual reference to, it seems to be to sacrifice and things, things destructive to life. Now, that's not saying that homosexuality is destructive to life. I don't need to go there. I don't need to pull it down. I'm just, but where I'm looking and seeing this, something at play, then I just want to dig it out and have a look at it. Mm-hmm. If there's nothing there, then well, let's put it back. But if there's something there.
Right.
So just very interesting to find that this human sacrifice seems to take place on Lesbos as well. Attica celebrated three main feasts in his honor in December, February, and March. The latter, the great Dionysia, was the most important. It was during this these festivals that dramatic performances took place. And the worship of Dionysus was always closely associated with theatre. So what we've been seeing again and again is this mix of theatre, or modern terms is going to be TV, movies,
right,
and this Dionysian cult, which is this, well, in particular what we're looking at is the satyrs within the Dionysian cult.
Right.
We started, this whole conversation started at the end of last week's podcast. Michael, you had mentioned that the Saturnian cult.
Yes.
And I was just saying to you, well, Saturnian and Saturn is just so similar.
Right, and that's what I'm thinking it is. The Saturnian cult, a lot of times the obvious symbol that you'll see in their work is the Saturn, like the planet Saturn. You'll see like the, you know, the planet itself with its rings used as a logo.
Right.
And part of a uniform. It's usually present within, you know, either the TV show or the movie or whatnot.
Okay. And you were saying that it seems to be, when you see this, the show's often sci-fi and they have a militaristic...
It's a group of men, usually males.
Right.
Sometimes they'll squeeze a female in there, but she's usually pretty much like a guy.
Right.
Yeah, it's a militaristic, invasive... I think if it has a hierarchical
structure, right, yeah. Which is that militaristic, which is very much a militaristic thing as well, isn't it?
Correct.
So we were just noticing how often, we were talking, and Michael just happened to talk about Kirk and Spock, and whatever my mind did when I heard him, I just kind of said, hang on, what did you just say?
Kirk and Spock.
Yeah, I'm thinking, hang on, that... Because we're talking satyrs, you know, we've got there's a whole kind of crazy play going on. It's like, wow, I heard the word cock in there. It just really sounded, I never noticed it before.
Right.
But when you put these two guys together and you mix their names together, you've got this word cock.
Mm.
Which is, in all the reading I've been doing again and again with the satyrs, they are all about...
And Spock has the pointy ears. Just
right,
like
with
the satyr,
exactly, yeah. Very goat-like.
Mm-hmm.
And... started just seeing more and more and more the satyrs within Hollywood. The male, this male energy, we've just been seeing it more and more and more. Okay, but let me drop back. I wanted to drop back to, well, we were mixing in the satyrs with the comedians.
Right.
And that's how we kind of, I looked at Robin Williams and I found that clip. Mm. You know, previously we talked about, so in the play, Saturday Night Live, if you just listen to the word, we're always told that Saturday it's Saturn Day. But what if it's just this day of satyrs, the Saturn
mm-hmm.
Day?
Right.
And
then you've got why I opened up with the Saturday Night Live.
Right, exactly that.
Weird.
So what we're looking at there is the satyrs. Saturday Night Live is about basically a bunch of satyrs. How many women did you see? Was there a lot of women in that?
Not as many as the guys.
And even when we watched the one that we watched, we had Kirstie Alley, who was very masculine in her There's not a not a feminine. In fact, the little bit I've seen, when you see a woman, she's not in any way, the ones that I saw, in no way is she feminine.
No.
She's as hard and...
Other than the hosts. I mean, we didn't really concentrate on the hosts. There's been a lot of hosts.
Sure.
But, like, for example, when the video that we did look at, it had Kirstie Alley, and you're right, she was very masculine.
I mean, I don't want to make this fit.
No.
I don't want to force this and go, yes, this is sadist, and then we'll pretend we didn't see that, we'll pretend we didn't see that.
No, but the regulars that were on there, they're always on there, and it's mainly men.
Right.
It's mainly the good old boys. It's kind of like when we saw them dressing up as women as well. There was this one skit, they were all dressed as girls. Every guy on the screen was dressed as a woman.
Yeah, and their big names, Adam Sandler was in there. Adam Sandler did a surprisingly good woman. I was...
He was the most convincing one.
Wow. He's carrying this off so well. Is that Adam Sandler or not?
Right. And that's how we got started on this. Yeah. It was in the Comedy of Death. We were playing with the idea that perhaps comedians were channeling.
Exactly. And I haven't let that go. But, you know, maybe what we're looking at is whether they're channeling the muses or somehow satyrs, or they become satyrs. But I have just shifted so far from, you know, I used to enjoy comedy and a good laugh. Now I see, to me, the comedy is a massive overstimulation.
Mm-hmm.
You are being bombarded with sort of joke after joke or skit after skit. And I remember I was watching a Billy Connolly one once. It was a few years ago now, and he was so on form. And it was a video. I had to turn it off because I felt sick from laughing. Now when I think about that, that is the kind of thing, this kind of, we were talking about this today, this kind of release and craziness and revelry that happens when you're watching comedy,
right.
Isn't that so like what happens with Dionysus' followers? They're all about this revelry, this abandon. So I'm just getting to think that comedies, the way they're done, is you become part of this Dionysian revelry, this... you know, otherwise it's known as orgiastic revelry. You are just, this stuff is coming out of you. You know?
Because if you think when there's one guy on stage and you've got 7,000 people, 10,000 people in front of you laughing as hard as they, or most of them laughing really hard.
Losing control with laughing.
Can you imagine the energy or the vibration or whatever, you know, the comedian is witnessing or he's in the middle
or
of.
Or drawing into himself. Well, we don't know, you know, quite how it works, but... Right. I just can no longer see comedy as, you know, I was told laughter is the best medicine, and I was fed, and I think a lot of people were fed, the story of Norman Cousins, who had some illness, and he decided he wanted to get well, and so he hired all these comedies out, and he laughed himself well. Yeah. I remember that from way back. I haven't looked deeply into that story, because it may well be that there's things to be spotted, but I bought that.
Right.
Reader's Digest used to have a few pages sort of laughter is the best medicine to get you laughing.
Right.
But what we're looking at with comedy is massive overstimulation, as opposed to if you're with your friends and you're laughing about and you're being silly.
Right.
This is very definite, aimed specifically at you.
Right.
Comedy. And as we've seen, one of the muses is a muse of comedy.
Right.
You know, the more we look into it, it's like these muses have provided... Humans, we aren't making anything up. We're simply rehashing everything that was given to us through civilization via... Okay, whether it's the muses or not, the different cultures have different things. But always people turned up, or someone turned up to teach people the skills of weaving and...
Right.
The different skills that people use, you know, whether it's they brought fire or whatever.
Right.
We keep using the same things that were given to us eons ago. We keep doing it in the same format. There's the comedy, there's the muse of comedy, the muse of tragedy.
Yep. Didn't you say Billy Connolly never worked from a script? Because Robin Williams, in that article, says he never had any written material. He was just totally doing the improvisation.
There's this bit, I'll just step back and then I'll find that bit that you're talking about there. This bit here, talking about one of his, the article that you opened with. They were saying, almost 2 hours later, drenched in sweat, having traversed the comic universe at the speed of light, he stands in amazement as the screaming crowd rushes the stage as if they had been subjected to a Van Halen concert. He feels like Elvis. It's rock and roll comedy.
Yeah. Rock and roll comedy. And Elvis. Comparing him to Elvis, I think when we originally started looking for information.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Robin Williams is the king of comedy.
That's what I looked. I typed in king of comedy and found this article. I wanted to see, is he the king of comedy?
Mm.
And it's got here, in the article, Williams reigns as comedy's lunatic king.
Right.
And this was written when Robin Williams was 33.
Yes.
And called the unofficial comic laureate of his generation. So, I wanted to go back to what you were saying.
I'm pretty sure that...
Does this bit about, does this fit in with what you're saying? Sorry.
We don't have to get sidetracked. I do know that it did say that he doesn't,
He doesn't have a script. He doesn't have a script. That's right. He doesn't have a script. So he said, so where's this coming from? Mike and I both are considering now that he's channeling something.
Yeah.
That something comes into him or something.
Right.
Because you just can't, to melt out that sort of stuff at that pace for that long.
At that pace.
And can you read this out?
Yeah, it's for your normal red-blooded comic, this performance at the end of his recent sold-out 23-city tour would be considered a good night's work. But the metabolism of Robin Williams, not to mention the mind, doesn't play by union rules. On just about every night of his tour, this, we're talking every night, after finishing his show, and sometimes two shows a night,
wow,
he would feel compelled.
Compelled, yep.
To unwind, to kick out that excess energy. How? By finding a local comedy club, taking the stage, and improvising for another 40 minutes. He says, that's fun, that's play. I have to go out and make contact.
Mm-hmm.
To find something new, to get back that playful spirit again.
Playful. To get back that playful spirit.
Yep. It says that he did a new town every night, running on 3 to 5 hours of sleep, repeating the same cycle of compulsive comic behavior.
Wow. So, you know, in no way are we looking at someone who is creating something. No, it's just here's some forceful entity just being channeled out through him.
Yeah.
That's and exactly that's it. Just, wow. So now I am just so, which I want to get to, go on, sorry.
I was just going to say, which, is not how his mother described him as a child, which we'll get to later. She did not being that way, so it makes me wonder again. Saturday Night Live, what I got the feeling when we were watching it, was that it seemed to be a large comic initiation.
Well, that's like what we've been looking at. You and I have been wondering about that. So that comedians have to pass through...
The Satyrian Knight.
Well, actually, I didn't want to say pass through. It's like this is where they get initiated. This is
would be part of.
This is Dionysus's club.
Yep.
And you go through that and you become
mm-hmm.
a comedian.
Right. So, and I believe Saturday Night, Night Live is in
New York. You
mean Saturday
Night? Yes.
I believe it's in New York City.
Okay.
Which you've got New York City on one side of the United States, and then you've got Hollywood on the other side.
Yeah, your country's all wrapped up.
It pretty much. Dionysus cult in America.
Right.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah, you were saying actually there's a bit here about his mother said, where is it here? What do we have this bit here? He has often described himself as a fat kid, but his mother, Laurie, begs to differ. Never in his life was he fat. Why does he say that? Perhaps for the same whimsical reasons he used to say he was born in Edinburgh, Scotland, when Chicago was his real place. His real birthplace. His mother describes him as a fantastic student, an obedient kid with beautiful manners, who showed no signs of his madcap side around the house.
Right.
So it sounds like...
This isn't something he originally had from birth.
Yeah, or is he describing... Is he someone else? Is there someone else inside him?
Exactly.
You know? So, and that came in later after, you know, when he was older.
Right.
But
right.
The more I look at comedians now, I just feel like there's something coming out of them that's not, it's not them.
Yeah. Is it a muse?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Is it a muse? Is it a particular entity? Is it a type of entity? And so one of the things also that you and I have been contemplating is how, see, comedy is so cutesy. It's so safe. It's so, just makes you feel good. It's just for a laugh.
It's a tension release.
It's a tension relief. And it's so light-hearted. that we don't even give it a second thought. You know, it's not considered serious TV. Right. It's not like a drama or a movie.
Right.
So this thing that is considered so kind of just nice and for a bit of a release, it goes right under the radar.
Yeah.
Who would even look at it twice?
Right.
So one of the things I want to suggest is that to show how powerful and how strong it is,
right,
you go to the tarot deck. And in the tarot deck, the first card is the Fool. And I'd like to suggest that the Fool is the comedian.
Right.
Nothing starts without the Fool. Nothing starts. The comedian is the strongest, most powerful. The magician comes second.
Yeah.
The Fool comes first.
Right.
And behind those two, we have lurking the High Priestess, which I suggest is that Kali energy, that she is the driving force behind them. She's the manipulator.
Yep.
They work for her.
Right.
The magician works for her and the Fool works for her, but the Fool is the one who starts.
Yep.
So I suggest that the Fool, the comedian, is the highest initiate that you have in Hollywood,
yeah,
or anywhere in the entertainment industry.
Right. And isn't Adam Sandler like one of the highest paid, I don't know if it's actors or comedians or something now, right now?
Right, well, we were looking at, I just had a brief look into Robin Williams when he died, and then the first day of tribute came out to him, which I think was September 9th.
Which is Adam Sandler's birthday.
Is Adam Sandler's birthday, and I thought, wow, look at that. You know, we've looked about this. Is it what happens in Hollywood? One goes up, one goes down, and one goes up.
Yep.
And so wondering whether the new King of Hollywood that takes over from...
And then King of Hollywood, the King of Comedy.
Sorry, the King of Comedy. Well, actually, yes, because what I just said.
True.
The highest initiate in Hollywood,
true,
is the comedian.
True.
So we could say that.
True.
That the King of Hollywood will be Adam Sandler. This is a yes, I'm not sure.
Right.
It's possible that there is always a vying between two.
Right.
If we look at the chessboard, there's always two kings.
Yeah, there could be Adam Sandler, there could be... Jim Carrey.
Yeah, you're wondering about Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
See, now when I'm looking back at the chessboard, you know, the chessboard, which is this seems to be the game of life. There's two. There's always one playing the other.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, that was part of the reason to look up the Kings of Comedy. Just wondering on the chessboard, you know, which were the kings? Because in that phrase, another name for chess is the king must die.
Right.
So, there's so much here, and I try not to get sidetracked. Trying to remember all, actually.
Right. Also, when you were talking about the tarot cards,
mm-hmm,
it just seemed like Hollywood has set up, in my mind, you got the comedians as the Fool, then the next card is the magicians, like David Copperfield,
right,
Dynamo, these guys that are also, in my humble opinion, after doing the research I did a few last year, the year before, on the magicians, Chris Angel, they're also using some sort of channeling, some sort of entity for their magic.
Oh, well, it certainly, yeah, it would.
By
yeah.
far. And then when you said the High Priestess, like your Madonna's, Madonna initiated Christina Aguilera and Britney Spears on stage
in
a halftime show or something. You know, and then you've
so
got...
So like were you Jodie Foster's and all that kind of, is that what you mean with the priestesses? Would you call them? Do you think them as priestesses, high priestesses?
I don't know. I know that they're part of the sisterhood.
Mm.
They could be. I'm just playing off the top of my head. I see Madonna as a high priestess.
Yeah.
Like kind of have how I see Elton John as a high priestess. Not a high priest.
Oh, I do.
Saturday. She's got that song Saturday.
Oh, I think of all the priestesses, the male priestesses, Elton John will be the most.
Mm.
At least for the singing. Could bring in... I don't know, I'm guessing. I'm going to think Adam Sandler's going to be high up there as well.
Right.
Now. But probably Elton John is the... But I'm still working with the idea that this Kali-type energy, this female energy, is the ruling energy. That's
right.
Where I'm working at the moment.
Right.
And it's all play.
I agree.
With... her minions below her being the Fool, the
right,
comedians, and the magicians, like you say,
right,
that they're working for this female energy, this
right,
devastating female energy.
Right.
Anyway, going back to... going back to Robin Williams and this thing, there was another thing here talking about Billy Crystal, who said Billy Crystal was a close friend of Robin Williams. He has this glaze in his eyes. You know he's in another place. I mean, there you go. There's someone telling you that This person is not there. There's someone in their place doing this stuff. There's someone there.
Exactly. And if you guys out there that like to play with words, Billy, like Billy the Kid or Billy Crystal.
Billy is
like a goat.
A goat.
Billy Goat's Gruff.
Satyr.
Is a...
Yeah, I got that today. I was thinking, Billy the Kid, I can't believe I never thought about that. You know, Billy is a kid, is a goat, and a kid is a goat.
Exactly.
So,
have
Billy
a little
the
word
Kid.
Play.
Yeah, massive.
Yeah.
Another satyr.
Another satyr.
Maybe I'll look into that just for a bit of fun. But you're right, the Billy is again. So, a satyr was talking about another satyr.
Right.
And one satyr, what did one satyr say of the other satyr? He said, he has this glaze in his eyes. You know he's in another place. It's my Saturday night. That's my Saturday night live joke. I don't think I'm going to make it to stand up. Never mind.
Yeah, stand up comedian.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was saying about that too. Stand up, is that like, that just seems so...
Erection-like?
Yeah, erection-like, exactly. What stands up, you know? The male member.
The male satyr.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So there was another little bit here... it's not that he tells the funniest jokes. No, what Williams evokes in people is not simply laughter, but a sense of amazement at the spectacle of a brain on constant spin cycle. Classic stand-up comics from Bob Hope to George Carlin. So we could read up classic stand-up satyrs.
Yeah.
Or actually, for the, we know what the stand-up means and we know what the comic means. So classic satyrs from Bob Hope to George Carlin to Jay Leno are stars. Now look at the word star.
Right.
You're only missing a Y and you've got the word satyr once again. It's right here. It's been here all along. So we could say, okay, I'll go back and read that again. Classic satyrs from Bob Hope to George Carlin to Jay Leno are satyrs. But Williams is a shooting satyr. I mean a shooting star. And again, at once a satirist, I'm sorry, a satirist, did you say?
That's what it says.
A comedian and a superb actor. This one-man repertory company dashes from mask to mask, voice to voice, like a man possessed by comic demons.
Ta-da. See, they don't hide it.
No,
they
don't.
Write exactly what is going on.
And I would like to, on this little point-proving satyr thing, because I think this is really cool, is another little bit from this article. He was an obscure comic until one day he went to audition for the part of an alien in an episode of Happy Days. Asked to sit down like a man from space, he promptly sat on his head. The part was his, the episode was a smash, and the notion of Walkin' Mindy was born. Talk about sudden success. It was 0 to 60, Robin explains. Dance, white boy. Move around in those suspenders, you cute little bastard.
Mm.
Now, we both of us thought that was a really weird line.
Yeah, because he said it. Robin Williams said it. And I thought it sounded like he was
channeling
a voice.
Yeah.
Like he was talking about himself, but it wasn't him.
Yeah. Yeah, it just sounds as like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
But then you break it down and you look at the words again. Dance, white boy. What does a satyr do? Satyrs are always dancing and cavorting around. Move around in those suspenders, you cute little bastard. Satyrs being small, I believe. Well, they have large appendages, but they're small.
Right.
And those suspenders, and I just got this mental image of... Because suspenders, well, especially if you want go for that gay type, well, only gay or
right.
male, they yeah. have no shirt and suspenders, and you're holding up. What is a satyr? Like, they have these... It's the goat legs.
Right.
It just, I don't know, I just got a strong image.
And when we went further, Mork has rainbow-colored suspenders, which the show came out September 14th, 1978, Mork and Mindy.
Mm-hmm.
San Francisco had just adopted their gay parade flag in June 25th, I believe, 1978.
1978.
Which was rainbow colors.
Right.
So they had that out in San Francisco, just as Mork and Mindy. And what's Mork wearing? He's wearing rainbow.
He's got his rainbow suspenders.
You could
he's,
say,
as you pointed out, he's a very hairy little guy.
He is hairy.
He is this perfect little satyr.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like this satyr, this... See, if you look at Dionysus, the energy you've got there are the females... The females go into this orgiastic revelry. Hopefully we'll come to this. They're not having sex with the satyrs. They just, of themselves, something happens to them and they become overwhelmed with this energy. And then they go off and they pull small animals into pieces, pull their babies into pieces, they kill, they're just, they're really nasty.
They're out of control.
They are beyond out of control. And then you have the satyrs. Now, the satyrs, you just think about it. The satyrs are this goat-like being. They have the horns and the ears. And they have the huge penises, the huge erections. They're just wandering around all the time with these huge erections. I mean, you can't help but think of a gay parade. I couldn't help but think of a gay parade.
Right.
And, you know, when you said about the rainbow suspenders that Mork's wearing, and here he is. He's this little hairy little satyr.
Yeah.
You're thinking that what are you seeing in Mork and Mindy is that you're seeing this. Here's this Dionysian satyr homosexual energy.
Yeah.
And again, it's not an attack on... Who needs to attack homosexuals? I couldn't care less.
Yeah.
But this stuff is being fed to us and we never had any idea.
Yeah.
And what we're doing is we're not looking at... It's not an attack on homosexuals. It's an attack on the Dionysian culture or cult.
Right.
This cult that is everywhere.
Well, it's definitely steeped to the rest in the Western world. The Dionysian cult is completely what the United States culture is based on. And a lot of the Western world...
It's because you're so focused on the entertainment. You are known as the entertainment place of the world.
Yeah,
where we all look to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Hollywood. Everybody, you know, it's okay, well, we could almost say that the, you know, 6/10 of the world is steeped in Dionysian cult.
Oh, I think it's everywhere. I think the more... And I'm quite sure as soon as we finish this podcast, we're going to step into the next level of it because we just keep seeing more
right.
and more and more.
Right.
It's just unbelievable.
Right.
Okay, so something else. Comedians, let's do this. If we leave Robin Williams alone for a minute, and who's up on the limelight this week is Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
What are we looking at again? A male comedian, all sorts of sexual, sort of deviant sexual practices.
Right.
And I think it's again and again and again we've got this. But, right, okay, you can come in and lay blame and go and call him a bastard or whatever.
Right.
But what if it is? If it's the Dionysian cult, then Bill Cosby is acting simply according to, he's just being a satyr. This is what satyrs do. Why would you be surprised at him and then forget about all the others? Oh yeah, let's ignore all the others and make this one. Whereas if we go across the board,
right.
you know, we take the word star, we put the Y in, and we look at satyrs. I don't know. Does that make all the females the maenads? You know, the friends. I don't know, but
possibly.
Maybe
possibly. I do remember we were talking about the Kali energy. That, here I am stuttering here.
Stutter away.
Yes.
Feel free.
The singer, what was her name?
Singer?
Cyrus. Miley Cyrus.
Oh, right.
Was, somebody had covered one of her concerts, and she was just gyrating on a car, and just had her tongue sticking out the way you do, like a lot of the...
Oh, the Kali, you mean
pictures
the Kali
of Kali is depicted.
Right.
And a lot of parents were not happy with her. They said that it was just like going to a porno movie, except for the fact she didn't have a guy crawling all over her.
Well, you know, so you just saying that makes me think you're talking about gyrating. This is this dancing again that happens with the Dionysian cult.
Right.
We're seeing again and again, and I must admit, I'm not seeing it again and again because I don't actually watch the music videos, but I'm pretty sure that's exactly what's happening.
Yeah.
And maybe again, when we're looking at all the boy bands or all the dancing, the gyrating...
Mm-hmm.
We're just seeing the satyrs and the maenads.
Right.
Or, I'm sorry, if someone who's into mythology knows how to pronounce that better than me, it may be called the maenads or something.
Yeah.
It is the, or the Bacchantes, or they're the female followers of Dionysus. And, yeah, so if I get it wrong, sorry. What else in the notes here? Oh, yes, 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 yes. Disney. Otherwise known as Dionysus.
Yes.
Which, did we realize? Dionysus, Disney, so fucking close.
Mm.
And what we're looking at is that Disney is the children's initiation into the Dionysus cult. So we are all belong to the Dionysus cult.
Absolutely.
And you are initiated through Disney.
Through Disney, yeah. And a lot, because you're just looking at the Mickey Mouse Club.
Yep.
And how many stars or satyrs or, you know, maenads, whatever you want to call them, go through that.
Yeah.
You know, how many of them are in there?
Well, one of the reasons as well that we looked at the Mickey Mouse Club was just, it's this really bizarre little, Michael picked up a book called The Nine Muses, and they have this bizarre thing on the etymology of the word muse. Someone actually went to town and had a real play with it. But there is a word called mouseion, and it's spelled M-O-U-S-E-I-O-N, mouseion. And it actually means it's the original word for a museum or a library or a temple.
Mm-hmm.
Now, supposedly, etymologically, the mouse eon doesn't relate back to the mouse. I was really hoping to find a correlation.
Right.
But that wouldn't stop me. Because I just think it was, I'm looking at the word going, look, that's, how can they have the word mouse in there?
Right.
And so what if we're looking at, when we see the Mickey Mouse Club, because I think with English language, with the symbolisms, people, they play. We don't need to get it, they get it.
Yeah. So, the English language, like you were saying, is such an alchemically hard language that it's industrial strength.
A power, so powerful, yeah.
That a word can be a symbol. They
right.
don't have to, it doesn't have to look like a temple.
Right.
But just knowing that.
Right.
You know, it's,
so breaking down this mouseion word to mouse, because I'm like, where does Mickey Mouse come from? He's just weird, you
right,
know?
Right.
But if we were looking at Mickey Mouse and the mouse spirit as part of that mouseion, which is a temple,
right.
then we're perhaps looking at it like a Dionysian temple. It's the introduction, the initiation of children without even knowing it. He is the symbol of, for children,
yeah.
of Hollywood. He's your initiation symbol, Mickey Mouse.
Right.
You enter through him, and then you never, by the looks of it, you never get out again once you're initiated in Dionysian culture.
You enter Dionysian land. Yes,
right,
well.
You do. Well said, I like that. Now, also interesting is that, you know, we've heard about how many children supposedly go missing in Disneyland.
Right.
And if I come back to this again, we're talking about Dionysus. One of his oldest festivals was the Agriona, where a young boy was sacrificed.
Right.
You know, we've got to start, it just started, you and I, we've been talking this week, and we've got to points where I think, this is horrible, this is so horrible, I'm not,
right.
whereas I can have fun, you know, playing around with stuff, the more clearly we see this, the more the structure starts to just show itself,
right.
it's really horrible, it's really, really horrible.
Yeah, it is, but one of the great things about seeing the structure, it's kind of like, I had said to you, it's like knowing a true name of a demon, you have power over it. So if
right.
you see the structure, you can change underlying structure.
Right.
You can say, okay, you know what, screw you, Dionysian structure, I'm going to go this way.
Yeah. You know, even if you can take that knowledge, and if you're watching your TV programs, and who doesn't, really start to look, start to pull these bastards apart, you know, just pull out their hair, so to speak, you know.
Which we've been doing with the show once. Wow.
Well,
once
we've done it with
time.
Anything. We've actually watched quite a few different,
yeah.
and we watched Bridesmaids the other night. Well, I forced Michael to watch it again.
Thank goodness we only got through half of it.
And it was as disgusting as the first time I watched it. I was just so shocked at the level of, I guess, like, depravity and degradation that has gone on. What's considered funny, you know?
Yeah.
You know, once upon a time, there was at least some kind of mental, you know, while you were being pumped with this Dionysian energy, the comedians at least sort of worked your mind. But this stuff is just so crass and gross and...
Gross, it was mean.
Yeah, the women were just
vile.
Disgusting.
Yeah, vile.
All of the women were disgusting. The guys were so weak. Here we see it again. Now, this is Dionysus culture to a T. The men are weak.
Yeah.
The men are weak. And the women are just, well, just watch out. Just scary.
Right. Exactly.
And, and maybe the men are weak because within the culture, the men are actually only interested in other men. Maybe that's the weakness.
It could be.
That's what they're betraying. They don't seem to want to be around the women. They're scared of the women.
Yeah, could be. Or like one of our commenters had mentioned, the world running on sex and death magic. It could be that they're just using, the men are just using their own energy, or just, you know, using the other guy's energy just for sex.
Right. Actually, there's something I want to come into there. And before that, I'm just going to say thank you again to everyone who left comments.
Yes,
and
thank you.
And I want to just say that I've become a really slack tart as far as answering comments go.
I took a stab at it this morning.
Thank you, Michael. So if I don't reply, it isn't that I haven't read them. It's just that I'm actually got a lot of things going on in my life, and it actually takes quite a while to come up with a response to commenters. It actually takes, you really got to think about it.
Right.
Which is another reason why, you know, if you're posting your comment, think about it too. Think about what you say. Comments are valid, and other people read them as well. I read your comments.
You moderate.
But I've been but I've become a lazy slack. Lazy slack person who doesn't necessarily reply. But thank you. Thank you for them, and remember, other people read them as well. Now, shifting right along, I thought we'd get straight into orgasms.
Okay.
No, this is an idea that I had. With the female, the orgiastic women in the Dionysus cult, so what happens to them is that they just become, we talked about in the last one, they lose control, they become basically almost psychopathic murdering entities. But according to, let me see, did I find this somewhere in the book? I was reading it to you before, about what happened to them. Remember that bit about the moon? How they supposedly just go crazy in
dancing
the moonlight?
Underneath the full moon?
Yeah, something like dancing under the full moon and, fuck it, I can't find it. Never mind.
They were in a fervor dancing under the
yeah.
I remember that part.
Yeah, okay, somewhere in there. But, I mean, we've done it before. So, they go into some strange, frenzied state, and they do awful things. Now, I said in the last podcast I'd read, there's some kind of scientific experiment on orgasming women said that, you know, when they do orgasm, that certain parts of their brain shut down, which was their sense of
danger.
The sense of danger, yes, and also like their morality or their you know, just doing things. It's almost like being good people or something, you know. They're, you know, being proper, normal, nice women that sort of everyone expects them to be.
Yeah.
That shuts down. Now,
they literally go out of their mind.
Huh,
so
interesting.
So speak.
Interesting. Whereas the men, all that happens is their pleasure centers just light up like Guy Fawkes Night. so this is really interesting. You have two very different things happening
right.
In the within the brain of the different sexes. Now, I know there's one commenter who thinks that means that women shouldn't have sex, but I'm going to travel down a completely different path here. From all the research I've been doing, I'm thinking, well, what sounds like to me is that, well, one, okay, I doubt that anyone really, any male on this earth, or very, very few, will actually have been around a truly orgasmic woman. From the research I've done, pretty much all women are frozen. Whatever you might have experienced out there is some kind of a sideways explosion, not the real thing, because it's just something that's been put on women. I don't know why. I wondered whether they deliberately shut themselves down or they were shut down in some way. But there is a freezing of women's sexual energy, and I think that's why, possibly why the world is in such a dire state. It may have been the number one control mechanism to put this world into the state that it's in. So the idea that I've had is that if women defrosted, and that when they do orgasm, that the energy is so huge that men's role is to ground them. That's what the penis is. It's like a grounding rod, amongst other things. You know, we're so used to the idea that the penis is just there to you know, we think to serve the penis, you know, really. Right. It's attached to a guy and it's looking after itself and it just...
Right.
And not actually... And I contemplated this a long time ago. You know, what if the penis actually has so many other different possibilities that are not even used? You know, like a... what do you call those... divining rod type things, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Find water?
Exactly. Or lots of things. You can find, you know, whatever. Yeah. Find gold. Hey, guys, go find gold. So, well, why not? It kind of looks like that. It looks like this sensing organ. So maybe men have got it all wrong too, are not using it the way it could be used. We've probably both been so skewed.
Mm.
But my feeling was that... that if that happens to women, this total, it sounds almost like an explosion, you know, it just, I was thinking of like a nuclear, an atomic explosion that would just keep going and going and going.
Right.
So that the male part would be to just pull that energy right back and probably pull it into themselves.
Right.
There's a book called The Natural Superiority of Women by Ashley Montagu. And it's an amazing, Ashley is a guy too. And he just talked about, you know, just... chapter after chapter after chapter of what he called the natural superiority of women. He's not talking about that they're better than you, but physically within their bodies, the way they are structured, they're stronger, hardier. You know, they've got the two X chromosomes. It's almost like a man has got an X and a broken X one with his Y, which is... It's we're not talking more of the sexes here. We're just saying that this is seems to be how it is.
Right.
So, Jesus, what was I going to say?
Well, the battle of the sexes. I think I left in a comment to Sinead, which has been sped up.
Right, but okay. So, if that is this superiority of women, natural. Okay, natural. We're not talking
engineered,
or we're not talking emotionally better than, or mentally better than, or right. Whatever. We're just talking. Biologically superior, then perhaps what you have is this energy. They are the ones who are exploding out this energy. You know, if you look at anything, the female seems to come first. I know there's a story that God came first, but I think it's the female energy comes first and gives birth to things. The darkness, it's always the darkness comes before the light. There's a really interesting little book called The Art of Learning by Josh Whiteskin, who did a really famous chess champion in America, and then he switched over to Tai Chi and became a champion in that. And one of the things that he learned in his studies in Tai Chi, he learned how to go from soft into hard. That's what his teacher taught him. You have to go from soft into hard. You erupt from softness into hardness. It's never the other way around. So the feminine is the soft. So what I was thinking about with this orgasmic energy is the soft just erupts. And then the male hardness is to absorb that energy, to absorb it, to pull it in.
Right.
And between the two sexes, this creation energy happens.
Right.
Obviously, I don't really know what I'm talking about. I'm just playing. But I thought, wow, that makes a lot of sense. And I could see that, okay, what happens with the myonads, the reveling females, what's the one thing that's missing?
They're not getting grounded.
There's no men. Well, there's no men.
No.
There's satyrs, but the satyrs have no interest in these women. Okay, the satyrs are interested in other satyrs, which is kind of Hollywood there for you. So with the women, there's no man there. There's no men for them. There's no men to ground them. And, you know, I think within society... we're kind of looking at that as well.
Right.
Females are off in one place, males are in another.
Right.
And the females, the women actually need men to ground them, and men have no idea about how to do that. That's even their job.
Right. Yeah. And in today's society, this is just my two cents. I'm just going to plug this because I left this in a comment. That we had the male dominance, and then... all of a sudden, just like technology, because it's really not a very long period of time, from the 60s to the 90s, we had this massive feminine push, engineered push, which is really only 30 years if you look back at all the male dominance or the patriarchy or whatever.
Right.
That was in everybody's face, but maybe it took that long to build up the feminine energy. I don't know. But 60s to the 90s, massive Dionysus push, engineered for the artificial, I'm going to call it artificial. It's probably really there, but this is the engineered angry feminine.
Right.
And the 90s were about kick-ass females. Mm-hmm. As soon as we rounded that corner in 2000, then you had the dominance. From 2000 on to now.
Yeah.
The dominant females.
And it's just building and building and building.
It's building and building. And now I just have this funny feeling after 2012 that this is a final push. I don't know how long it'll last. This is a final push to separate the sexes.
Right.
For some strange reason. And then they're going to implement something else.
Right.
So, I mean, yes. Yeah. They're ungrounded.
I think if we're going to find a way, it has got to be men and women together.
Right.
And it's not avoiding anything. It is a partnership. It is a relationship. This is what's missing. There is no relationship between the males and the females.
Right.
And, you know, I'm learning slowly, slowly, slowly because, you know, I'm really coming from a place of never having understood relationship to slowly learning what relationship is. And maybe I'll have to do a podcast on that or an article on that. But I'm grasping that. Relationship is there's you and there's someone or something else. And the two of you meet in the middle. The two of you meet each other in the middle. There isn't a gap. You don't have to reach over your hand to try and pull them. You don't have to do 60 or 65% or whatever. You do 50% and they meet you 50% in the middle. And it's real and you support each other. You know, if one was going to trip over, the other one would be helping them back up again. And when that happens, a third thing is born. And this is partly why if we go back to the sex energy, because it's the same thing. There is no halfway point. With sex, there is 50-50. One of the things that's pissed me off is the idea that, you know, out there is that in sex, the sperm is the king. It is the 95%, and then there's this sad little egg somewhere that they go and batter to, not quite to death, and then they batter their way in, and out comes a baby that's 95% sperm. It isn't that way. It's 50-50, and there's no child out there that's born without that 50-50. The egg is 50%, the male is 50%, and they meet together. And out of that meeting comes a third thing, which is the child. So again, with relationship, two come together, 50-50, and out of that a third thing is built. And I really got a feeling of this morning. I got this feeling that with what a relationship is, it's almost like you have the two together, the third thing is created, and I had this sort of vision of the third thing like a house, like a shelter. And the two people, or you can have a relationship with anything, it doesn't have to be with a person. But the third thing is that is created is the thing, it shelters you, it protects you, you are covered by it, you add to it. Both of you add to this thing, this third thing. So whereas what I think most of us think happens is that if you're in a relationship, whatever sort it is, you're trying to get as much as you can from them, they're trying to get as much as they can from you, and that's it. That is not a relationship. Mm-hmm. That is mutual cannibalism. The third thing is there is no, you're not pulling each other apart. You're actually both of you contributing a little bit, say like a joint bank account, a little bit like that. You both contribute to this thing and you both can withdraw upon it. Nothing is lost from you. You add to something else. Nothing is ever taken away from you. I think this is the big thing. Everyone is terrified. Male against female, female against male, that should they come together, the other one is going to drain them, it's just going to take everything from them.
Right.
And you know what? Without relationship, that's exactly what will happen. But with relationship, relationship is that third thing, and that will save you.
Right.
That will save you. That's your life jacket that will flow you out of here. That is your oxygen mask that will let you breathe. You're not taking anything from the other person. They are free to give or not give.
Right.
And you're free to give or not give.
Right.
But everything that you do freely give goes to this. It's almost like a structure that you build between the two of you.
Right. Well said.
Thank you.
Well said. would you like me to wrap up or wrap up the Robin Williams?
Yeah, absolutely.
A little bit we did. Another point to make. The fact that John Belushi, that Robin Williams had been with him the night that he died in 1982 of an overdose.
Wow, yeah, so we were wondering, did something from John Belushi go into him, or, you know, I don't know.
Again, we were wondering that one up, one down.
Right, yeah.
Belushi.
John Belushi goes down, and Robert Williams goes even further up, yeah.
It's just a thought. I'll read this out loud. There is only one true addiction in his life, Robin Williams. It's to performing. It's 1:30 in the morning in the Comedy Store on LA's Sunset Strip, and Williams is standing alone in the deserted entryway, waiting to go on. He's making one of his many free, unscheduled appearances.
Well.
So Robin evidently had so much extra energy, which of course, you know, if you're possessed with comedic demons.
And comedic demons is a very,
yeah, and he...
The comedic disease, perhaps, we could call it.
Yes. The muses just wouldn't leave him alone. Ask Williams to locate the source of his volcanic imagination, and you'll get a more modest answer. It's a bouillabaisse. God, where does it come from? I don't know. I wish I knew, so I could find more.
Well... It's scary stuff.
It's scary. Yeah.
It is scary stuff. And now I find I look at comedians and I lost all trust, you know. I've lost all trust. And that's good. I think that's a really good thing. Why would you trust them in the first place?
Right. Well, we had discussed in the Comedy of Death that it being a powerful form of magic, for lack of a better word, because it opens you up.
It does. It opens you right. There is nothing that opens you up as much as laughing at a comedy.
Laugh.
Yeah.
And they can work whatever they want in there, like the most grossest things that you would never think of.
Right.
Like the Eddie Izzard and the Baby on Spikes bit.
Well, exactly. Now, okay, so glad you brought that up again, because we mentioned that before. In Eddie Izzard's, what was it called? What was the name of that one? Dress to Kill.
Yeah.
Dress to Kill, his stand-up. In San Francisco.
In San Francisco.
I might add.
Dressed as a woman.
That's right, he was. He's dressed as a woman. Well, he's dressed in women's clothes.
Yeah.
He's the man dressed in women's clothes. And but deliberately, because that's what he was like. He three times brings up this skit about babies, putting babies on spikes, and he does the little moan to go with it, you know, like a, I'm not going to do it, you don't need to imagine it.
Right.
And talking about how they taste like chicken, and, yeah, putting babies on spikes. Now, that makes a load more sense when you go to the satyrs and the Dionysian cult, where, with the Maenads, that's one of their big things, is ripping babies apart, ripping animals apart, ripping babies apart, ripping their own children apart.
Right. Exactly.
It just, when you look at it, it just seems like, wow, we've been shown this again and again. We have been part of this Dionysian cult. We have paid homage to it. We have been initiated. We have gone to all their services.
Mm-hmm.
We think if we thought of comedy as a service, like a church service,
right,
how many times have we partaken?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, when you laugh, you just open yourself right up. You're just letting... You're letting everything in.
Yeah. And parents, you're initiating your children... through the Mausoleum of Disney.
Right, the Temple of Dionysus.
Yeah. Basics, it's the basics, really.
Yeah.
And they don't hide it. They just...
We just didn't know where to look.
Yeah. Yeah.
We just didn't know where to look. So, just bear in mind, you know, the Fool is the number one, is the number zero. It's the first card in the tarot.
Yeah.
The Fool is the comedian.
And again, we weren't bashing Robin Williams. I really enjoyed Robin Williams growing up as a child. I did.
Yeah, well,
I did.
Yeah.
I thought he was hilarious.
Yeah.
And, you know, I feel for the man, knowing what he went through. But then again, it was a decision to be initiated. I'll play devil's advocate here.
Yeah.
It's their decision to go into Hollywood or New York or wherever. Because he did start at Juilliard.
Right.
He did start at Juilliard, and he wasn't very good, it was said of him.
All right.
He said, the teacher said, "You're just mimicking people's voices. Where's your voice?"
All right.
So that, and his mother, I'm just going to play a little bit here with a theory. His mother said he really had no affinity for this.
Mm-hmm.
He get picked apart at Juilliard. He leaves Juilliard. He never even graduated. He goes on to Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Now my theory is, hey, you're not very funny, but let's get you initiated.
Right.
So you can open yourself up and be a good muse.
Right.
And then, boom, he's just gone.
So he's calling it, he's calling it in. He opened himself.
He opened
I think that's it. They want this so much. Do you want something so much? What's the price you're willing to pay? Which
exactly.
is the thing that we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be that whether even the whole Dionysian cult runs on this one thing, that there's a price to be paid.
Right.
You know, if we were to look at perhaps Dionysian cult, not only in Hollywood, what if we were to play that it runs this entire world is actually just one large Dionysian cult. And the way that it's worked, the middleman is the one concept that you have to pay a price. There's a price to be paid. Whatever you want,
right.
you have to pay a price.
Right.
And what you and I have been looking at again and again is that is just such effing bullshit.
Yeah.
Anything that you really want, there's no price to be paid.
Right.
If you really want it, you don't need a middleman, there's no price to be paid. You have to be clear about what you want.
You're right.
And there's things that you have to do.
Right.
But at no point do you need to sell out to get what you want. If there's no direct way to get what you want, then you may have to invent a way, create a way.
Right. Yeah.
But you don't give up your soul, you don't get initiated
exactly.
into something.
That's
it's
what I
just
wanted.
Bullshit.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say is from my research, the initiates are the one that are selling out.
Right.
You're selling yourselves out.
Yeah.
Pay attention. You know, they're luring you in with all this promise of you're going to know all these secrets.
Right. And, you know, initiation could be much more than we realize. You know, initiation might be watching a comedy and laughing. It might be something we don't know. Like, how many times can you be initiated into perhaps different varieties? Say it's all Dionysus, but maybe different.
Right.
I don't know.
Aiming more at the initiations or the mysteries or these people that think they're going on learning all that about all these mysteries and everything.
Right.
And entities and you know, like the magicians and the demonic using the
going,
the
you're going for the high scale.
I'm going the conspiracy route.
Yeah.
But initiation, I think really that we've been sold that idea. It's like you said, the concept that you need a middleman.
Yeah.
You can't do this alone.
You can't do it by yourself. You're not going to do it by yourself. But you can't do it without initiation, is the thing. Without somebody else to come and do it for you because you're too stupid or
you don't know how to do it. Yeah,
you
you're
don't
too
have
stupid,
to do it.
So
yeah.
you're going to show you
yeah.
how to do it.
And they don't think that you can find a way, that you can create a way. This is the thing that they take away.
Right. Yeah. They disempower you by making you believe in the concept of the middleman.
Yeah, and the middleman is everything. The middleman is education. That middleman system is now so huge, whether it's an education or an expert. You know, when you look at the different... the comedy. You couldn't make someone else laugh. No, you need to go and watch someone else be funny, you know?
Right.
Everywhere, there's always just... Our whole world is just infested with middlemen.
Mm-hmm.
It's infested.
Be it visible or invisible.
Yeah.
It is infested.
Yeah. Okay. Enough?
I think that went well.
Sweet. So thank you everyone for listening. Hopefully we haven't upset too many people. Didn't mean to.
Yeah, and if we did, oh well.
Do like to pop a few different angles for seeing into a few different angles, a few different viewpoints out there to...
Right.
Just to widen your world up.
Yeah.
Because we're busy widening ours.
Yeah, to let people know that I've come to the realization that I'm not going to get into the whole truth movement thing. We were talking about truth as an addiction.
Oh God, that's
because that'll open
other
up
one.
A whole can of worms.
No.
But the when you symbolically aware and pay attention to the movies, the TV shows, you're going to see it everywhere. You're going to see it everywhere in some form. It's just never going to stop. I mean, you can go and pick everything apart. They're just going to keep coming at you with new...
That's right.
New ways, new methods. It won't stop.
Yes. But actually, for goodness sake, make sure you're spending some of every day in this world doing things, creating things for yourself, creating a life for yourself.
Exactly.
You know, it's not like we're going to give up this this searching, because there's things we want to know. There's, you know, we want a future.
Yeah.
And the way the world's going, that's not looking too bright. So, and we're not settling for not having a future, and we're not settling either. I'm not going to sell out to a middleman. So,
no.
It's a way of creating a world where there's room for us to live.
Yeah.
But you do need to. You need to be in this world doing actual things every day, or you're going to lose your grip on reality.
Yeah, ask yourself at the end of like a movie or a TV show, or just for examples like that, how did this add to my life?
Yeah.
Before you go, is this going to nourish me? Is this going to add to my life? If you start asking yourself that before I plop my butt down and lose 2 hours, 2.5 hours, an average movie, is this going to add to my life?
Right.
If you can't answer it, if you can't say yes, why bother?
Yeah. I mean, the only reason we watch things these days is actually to pick them apart. To unlearn things. See what we missed, to loosen up the grip of, you know, just to loosen that fucking Dionysian grip, really. Just get that. Get them off us. Just get those bastards. Just get away, you know?
Yeah. And we have been picking apart, I'll just plug this a little bit, been picking apart a series called Once Upon a Time.
Yeah.
And to me, Robert Carlyle is channeling, I think, Dionysus himself. I don't know. He's doing the male-female bit.
Right.
Perfectly.
Right.
Both. He's doing both.
Yeah.
And just in the way he moves, the voice he's doing, he's channeling it, I think.
Right. That show's got a lot of stuff, but I mean, it's like Michael said, is it going to add to your life to see this? And it's crap. So, I mean, it's crap already. It's crap.
Yeah.
So is it going to add to your life? If it's, I definitely find it useful to go back and rewatch some of the old stuff it's amazing to see. You look back and I watched that, I can't believe I liked that.
Yeah.
You know, just to undo the Dionysian claws are like they're all through our brain, and it's just loosening each one, loosening it.
Yeah.
Preferably if you can laugh at it. You know, rather than being into forced, overstimulated laughter, maybe we can laugh and let go of this stuff and go, I can't believe I liked that, I watched that, I believed in that.
Right.
You know, I can't believe I bought that.
Right.
But the only reason to do that is because each time you let go of some of this, you've actually got some real life to take its place. If you're just going to fill it up with new shit, there's no point. But if you're making space in your life for real living, you know, relationships with people or with something that you're interested in or whatever, it doesn't matter, whatever, just practicing the act of relationship again and again and again, it's vital.
Right.
Okay, we could go on forever, but actually time for dinner.
We're gonna call it good, and want to thank you for listening.
Please absolutely feel free to leave comments. I read them all. Just forgive me for becoming such a slack tart in replying. And I know other people read the comments, and it's good for people. It's a good thing to come together and just have a conversation. So please use the comment section for a conversation.
Yeah. It's not everybody, you know, all out to prove a point or make digs at each other.
No.
It's really just expand and get it out there.
Exactly. So have a great week, and you never know, we might be back next week.
That's right. You never know what we'll stumble across. Alrighty. Well, thank you, Alex.
Thank you, Michael.
And we're off.